So we'll start. So we're going to discuss a topic which we did mention before, before the summer a little bit. We're going to discuss it maybe with a few more facets, a few different facets. We probably won't come out with a conclusion necessarily, but questions to ask and things to think about. So the question that was presented to me by a psychiatrist was the following. Those that remember the question. Basically, there was a patient who had major depressive disorder. Major depressive disorder is defined by the, I think now they have DSM-5 is how they define it. It's basically, there are a bunch of different possible symptoms you can have, I think 7 or 8, and you have to have the majority the way, now, it's actually still, it's defined the same way for the last 10, at least 10 years, that you need to have the majority of these symptoms for at least 2 weeks. The majority of those symptoms plus, you know, not wanting to do any pleasure, stuff like that. Okay, so however it's defined, but this major depressive disorder, it happened to have been that as of the stats on the National Institution of Mental Health on their website, so from the last survey they did, which was from 2020, the number was 21 million adults had major depressive disorder. So that's obviously a crazy 8.44% of adults. Which is crazy. It's actually more in female than in male. It was like 10.5 for female, 6.6 for male, something along those lines. 18 to 25 was the highest percent also. So young adults, it was at like 18% or something, which is pretty crazy. Anyway, so again, major depressive disorder. So obviously, if there are 21 million people as of 2020 that had such a disorder, so obviously there aren't 21 million hospitalizations of that disorder. So obviously the major depressive disorder, those patients that are being hospitalized and admitted to the hospital, is obviously a severe case of this mental disorder. I think that that's very, very clear because, again, there aren't 21 million patients. So therefore, again, a patient that was admitted to the psychiatric ward with major depressive disorder obviously is going to be in the top 1% extreme of those 21 million, let's say, in 2020, obviously through the pandemic, that number skyrocketed. The last time I checked, I think, was 10 years ago, and the number was at 16 million. That was the average. So it went up a lot of millions since then, I assume as all mental disorders did. Okay, so again, this psychiatric patient has mental depressive disorder, a very extreme version that he had to be admitted to the hospital. Again, the backstory, if I recall correctly, was he lost his job, his wife left him, all those things that you can think about, and he was basically just staying in his bed, not eating, not drinking, not talking to anyone, literally just sitting in his bed for, I don't remember how long, it was obviously at least 2 weeks, until his family basically forced him to come to see a psychiatrist. So that patient who was admitted, so as we mentioned last time, so part of the behavior, aside from when they get to the hospital, they hospitalize them, and then they immediately start them on treatments and therapies. So the main therapy that they do is called CBT, Cognitive Behavioral Therapy, which basically has two facets. There's a pleasure and there's a mastery. They kind of get them to do things that they're going to enjoy, and they get them to do things that they're going to enjoy that they feel like they can accomplish something, you know, a puzzle, etc., etc. But the main, I guess you saw, the fundamental idea behind CBT, from what the psychiatrist told me, is to reintroduce them to their old life, to their old hobbies, to old things that they used to do. So in this particular case, there was a patient, the psychiatric patient with mental depressive disorder. Part of his therapy, or a main part of his CBT, was to reintroduce him to his old hobby, which happened to have been praying. He was a Catholic, he was a religious one, and he used to pray every day. And part of reintroducing him to normalcy of life, to become a fully, you know, functioning adult in society, is to reintroduce that aspect. And that was obviously a very important part of the treatment. And the question was whether this Jewish psychiatrist was allowed to treat him this way, was allowed to get him to pray to whatever they pray to. Whatever that is, I honestly don't know the details so well. But whatever it is that mutter to do? That was really the big question. So to begin the discussion, as I mentioned before, this is going to be, you know, in the extreme of the mental depressive disorder, someone who's admitted to the hospital. So the question is whether he falls into the category of a shota. So the Gemara in Chagiga on Gimel Amud Beis gives us three, or really four, examples of someone who is considered a halachic shota, someone who is incapacitated, is totally can't function in society, and again, halachically, therefore has no das, and he's going to be putter from all mitzvos and punishments. So those are alon b'beis ha'kvaro, someone who sleeps in the cemetery at night, yotzei yechidi b'layla, goes out for a walk at night, obviously, nighttime when there was no candles, there was just candles, there was no electricity, so someone who did that was obviously, forgive the term, crazy. Koreas ksuso, and someone who would rip his clothing, and Yushalmi, the Tosfos bring, adds on ma'avid kol mashen osin lo, loses everything you give to him. Okay, those are the four examples of a halachic shota that is pater from mitzvos, pater from punishments, pater from all of that. Wonderful. The Rambam in the ninth parak of Eidos, the ninth halacha, tells us that these three/four examples aren't examples. They aren't symptoms. They're really just examples of other things. Really, the Rambam writes, really anyone who's nitrifa daito, vidaito mishubesha es tamid, anyone who kind of always is not really there, his mind is always a little off, doesn't have to be literally one of these four things, but these are simanim for any number of things where his daito is mishubesha es tamid, he's constantly incapacitated. His das isn't there. It's always a little bit mishubesha, it's always a little bit mixed up. That's what the Rambam explains, and the Shulchan Aruch paskins this way, and Choshe Mishpat and Simon Lamed Hei. Again, that these aren't specific examples, they're just meant to be a simon for other things. Reb Chaim is quoted in Reb Yecheskel Abramsky's Sefer, Chazon Yecheskel on Shas. He has a tshuva, he has tshuvos at the end of Chelek Beis, so in Simon Ches there, he discusses the din of a shota a little bit, and when he discusses this concept, he brings in Reb Chaim Brisker, who says that it's not just that these are simanim for a wide array of daito mishubesh es tamid, whose das is never with him, but these are actually categories. And everyone who's considered a shota is going to fall into these categories in the Gemara. So one example he brings, and we're just going to discuss one, is Mara Shechora. Mara Shechora is the way we would identify that is depression, a severe depression. Now, obviously, there's a wide range, as we mentioned, but depression. So says Reb Chaim, Mara Shechora falls under the category of Yotzei Yechidi Balayla, or Lam B'Veis HaKfar, or someone who's going to sleep in a cemetery, or walk alone at night is because he's severely depressed, or one reason he's going to do that is because he's severely depressed. So it falls into that category. Either way, what comes out is someone who has this Mara Shechora, someone who has this severe depression, is under the category of a shote. Again, I'm going to repeat, that doesn't mean everyone, all 21 million people in 2020 that had major depressive disorder are part of the category of a shote. But it does mean that if you're hospitalized, there is a possibility that you are a shote. Now, how would we know if you are a shote or not? So this would be really up to the doctors and up to a rabbi. The Aruch HaShulchan writes this explicitly in Simen Kuf Chaf Aleph, where he points out that someone who has the lashon that he uses is balei hamara shchora she'ein osim klum dvarim shel shigon rak yoshvin ba'atzavos urechokim mechuberes anashim vein bevakshin lechol uchshein osim lahem lechol ochlin vein maschilin ledaber uchshesholin also onin ma'at dvarim. All these little things for someone who's really depressed, doesn't want to, totally antisocial, doesn't eat, doesn't do anything. So he discusses that if they look at him, and the doctor has to determine what his symptoms truly are, and in consultation with the rabbi, they'll figure out if they're under the category of a shota. But there is a very normal possibility that a person that has a severe depression will fall under the category of a shota, and presumably in this case, if he's going to be hospitalized, and you look at him, and he looks like he's not there at all, because he's so severely, deeply depressed, so it's very, very possible that he would fall under the category of a shota. Once he's a shota, he's pater min ha-mitzvos, and therefore this doctor is going to have no problem treating him with this treatment of allowing him or pushing him to go pray, if that's going to help him. Good. The problem is, or I don't know if it's a problem, but just the way this disorder specifically, other mental disorders are a little different, but this one specifically works is you can be hospitalized, have a really severe, severe depression, but it doesn't necessarily take long to get them to, for you to, I guess, like snap out of it. Once they put you on a treatment plan, and make, start the CBT process, so you'll still be depressed, very possibly and probably, but you won't be as depressed as when you look at the person, he's like not there anymore. He has no chias, right? So there is a point. Now, sometimes it takes longer. As what the psychiatrist told me is that it really does range. Sometimes it takes right away, and sometimes it can take months for the people to kind of become normalized again. I guess that's a strange word, but that's the word I'm going to use anyway. Functioning like a typical human. It could take short, it could take long, whatever it is, but there's a point where even when you begin treatment and you begin taking the proper medication, when they are able to figure out what that is exactly, and you begin this CBT, so you'll come out of that severe depression, and you'll still have major depressive disorder, but it won't be that 1% where you'll be a shota. So now what are you? You're not a shota anymore, so now can the doctor continue with this therapy? So presumably, anyone who's a psychiatric patient, and I pointed out before that the Nishmas Avram and Chelek Hey so has a whole chapter on Dinei HaRofe B'Shabbos V'Yontif, has a whole chapter on laws of a doctor on Shabbos and Yontif. So there he discusses specifically in one case a psychiatric patient who has a real depression, Kigona Sovel Midikon Amok, has a real severe depression. So we're mechalin aleus haShabbos, we're mechal Shabbos for him because, why? Because that's pikuach nefesh. It's pikuach nefesh that we're worried that he may be a sakana to himself or to other people. Anytime we're worried about that, that's pikuach nefesh, and therefore we are even mechal Shabbos for that person. And Rav Moshe says the same thing in Yoredei and Chelek Beis, and Shuv of Peches. Now it happens to be, and I've mentioned this before, that it's known that Reb Chaim Brisker felt that even someone who was coming out of it being a shota, even if he wasn't at a sakan, he wasn't a sakana to himself or to other people, even if he wasn't a danger to himself or to other people, it's still considered pikuach nefesh, as long as you're returning his nefesh, you're returning him to become back to a normal person. Anytime you're returning that to the person, to the patient, that's still part of pikuach nefesh. So anytime he's part of this process of making him better, of getting him to reintroducing him back into society, that's still going to be part of pikuach nefesh, according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik. So, what we have right now is when the person is hospitalized, it's very possible, based off the doctor's assessment, in consultation with whatever the rabbi is, that that person is a real shota, pater min ha-mitzvos, no problem to treat him with that treatment. However, once he comes out of that, which again is going to be up to the assessment of the doctor and rabbi, so now he falls under the category of pikuach nefesh. So pikuach nefesh, we say generally, we're mechalin al ha'as ha-shabbos. We would even be mechal Shabbos. Pikuach nefesh is docha mitzvos. Right? So then, it shouldn't be a problem. Correct?
Correct. He would have still been in the category of pikuach nefesh beforehand.
But he would have before when he was a shota. Oh, for sure, for sure. You just didn't need that.
Right, so you just lose the category
of shota, and now he's pikuach nefesh. You're right. He's just pikuach nefesh, quote unquote. But the one question is whether there's such a thing of pikuach nefesh by Gayim. Is that a real thing? So the Gemara in Sanhedrin and Ayin Dalet Amud Beis going on to Ayin Hey Amud Aleph asks that question. The Gemara asks, is there a mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem by Goyim? Do Bnei Noach, are they mitzvah Kiddush Hashem or lo? Are they commanded on the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem? And the Gemara is a short back and forth, and the Gemara finally comes and tries to bring a proof. And the proof is from Naaman. Naaman was a general in the army of Aram in Melachim Beis. He was a very, very successful general, the Pesukim tell us. They captured a lot of lands, and the Jews were worried about them. He captured some lands from the Jewish people, and he ended up taking a wife from one of the young Jewish women there. And it happened to be that Naaman was a mitzora. He was a leper? Is that what it's called? He was a leper. Okay. So he was a mitzora. So he happened to be mitzora. So this young Jewish woman who he ended up marrying mentioned to him, by the way, the Jews can heal you. The Jews are the ones that can cure that stuff. So Naaman asks the king of Aram if he can ask the Jewish king to help to heal him. He says yes. He writes the Jewish king a letter. The Jewish king is terrified. He rips his clothing, the Pesukim tell us, because he's worried. This is the strongest army there is, and he thinks, the general thinks, that he can come and we can just cure him. If we don't cure him, he's going to kill us all. So he's all worried, and the Navi at that time was Elisha, and Elisha hears about this and says, don't worry, send him to me, I'll show him what a Navi can do. So Naaman ends up going to Elisha, And Elisha tells him, go dip into the Yarden 7 times. Go to the mikvah. Go to the Yarden, dip under the water 7 times, and you'll be fine. And Naaman gets very upset, like, that's crazy. Naaman expected to come to Elisha, the Psukim tell us. He expected Elisha to, you know, say God's name a few times, wave something in front of him, and then heal him. So what do you mean, go dip in the Yarden 7 times? I could have done that myself. Anyways, he doesn't want to do it. Finally, Naaman's servant convinces him, go dip in the Yarden. And he does, and he's cured. And he comes back to Elisha, and he tells Elisha, now I know. Now I truly know that Hashem is the real God. And I'm not going to worship Avodah Zarah anymore. Naaman says he's never going to worship. But what Naaman still says, and this is the proof that the Gemara brings from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Naaman says, L'davar Hashem yislach Hashem la'avdecha, v'vo Adoni beis rimon l'shtachav oshama, v'hu nishan al yadi v'shtachav esi. Naaman says to Elisha, I'm not going to do Avodah Zarah anymore. But please forgive me, because whenever the king goes to the church, to Davin, he comes with me. I go with him. I have to escort him. I'm his general. And whenever he bows down to the idol, so he leans on me to bow down, so I'm going to, in effect, have to bow down to the idol. So please forgive me that I'm going to have to do that. This is the king. There's nothing I can do about it. And the next pasuk says, Vayomer lo lech l'shalom. Elisha says, okay, go in peace. So the Gemara says, oh, you see a proof that Elisha said it's not a problem. It must be that there's pikuach nefesh for goyim. Because Naaman, the king, was there. If Naaman refused to do that, what would have happened? He would have been killed. Who knows what would have happened? If he would have come and said, no, Hashem is truly the king, he would have been killed. So because of that, and Elisha knew that, Elisha said, okay, lech l'shalom, he didn't have a problem with that. Because pikuach nefesh is docha yisurim, and because of pikuach nefesh, that's why he was mutter. So it must be that the answer to the Gemara is that Bnei Noach are mitzuv on Kiddush Hashem. They're commanded on Kiddush Hashem. And there is pikuach nefesh by Goyim. So it must be. The Gemara ends up concluding and saying, no. Habtzina habfaresya. Naaman's case was betzina. Right? He was going to the church. There weren't befaresya in halacha, and especially in Kiddush Hashem, it was with 10 Jews. So hopefully there weren't 10 Jews where he was going to pray. I hope so. So it was just betzina. So the Gemara says, and this is how Rashi understands it. The Gemara says, no, you're right. Betzina, there would be Bikuach Nefesh, wouldn't be a problem. But maybe Befarhesia, there wouldn't be Bikuach Nefesh. That's how Rashi understands the conclusion. Betzina, not a problem, but Befarhesia, really, there is no Bikuach Nefesh, and Bnei Noach are Namitsuv on Kiddush Hashem. Good? That's Rashi. Tosos and the Rambam disagree, and Tosos and the Rambam have a different girsa, and they say the conclusion of the Gemara from Naaman is the fact that Elisha didn't, you know, give any distinctions. It must be that Pikuach Nefesh always applies to Gaim. No matter what, Pikuach Nefesh applies. So we have a machlokas on one hand, Rashi. Rashi says Pikuach Nefesh will apply Bitsina, not Befarhesia. On the other hand, we have Tosos and the Rambam who say Pikuach Nefesh applies in all cases for Gaim. That's the machlokas in the Gemara. Who do we paskin like? So we don't really have a Shulchan Aruch on this. Rav Shechter told me he thinks we paskin like the Rambam and Tosos. That would mean that there is Pikuach Nefesh by Gaim. So now that we have that, so back to our case. So it would be clear that in our case we have Pikuach Nefesh, there is Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim. Wonderful. Right? That's what even according to Rashi. Because it's Betzin. I hope there aren't 10 Jews at the church he davens in, one would hope. But according to everyone, there's Pikuach Nefesh, not a problem. Wonderful. The problem is that there are Rishonim and Achronim, and that's just we'll get back to this, but this is the way Rav Shechter understood the Gemara. It's not the way I initially understood the Gemara, which I'll explain in a second, but Rav Shechter was insistent that that's how he understood the Gemara, and that's what he thinks is true, that there would be Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim. The problem is that there are Rishonim and Achronim who seem to say that there is no Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim. In fact, if you look at Tosos there on the Daf, in Ayin Dalet, right, a small little Tosos on the bottom of the Daf, Tosos pretty clearly say, V'chai Bahem doesn't apply to non-Jews. V'chai Bahem, which is the source of Pikuach Nefesh, to live with, not to die, so that doesn't apply to non-Jews. That's clear in what Tosos say. In fact, if you look in Rabbi Kivi Eger in his commentary on Shulchan Aruch, in Hilchas Eiver Menachai, that's him in Samech Beis in Yoredeya. So Rabbi Kivi Eger quotes a Primigadim. The Primigadim wrote a lot of Sfarim. One of the Sfarim he wrote is on Chumash. You guys know what it's called? It's called Tevas Gomeh. That's his Sefer Chumash. It's kind of like one of these, if anyone's seen the Parashas Drachim of the Mishnah L'Malach, it's like these halachic Sefer the halachic svarim on Chumash, they kind of like take a case and they're like, oh, how was he able to do that? You know, all those. You got what I'm saying. So anyway, so that's what Teva's Gomez. So in the Os Aleph of Shemos, Rabbi Akiva Eiger quotes this, in Prima Gadim as a Safik, if you have a Ben Noach, an Anjou, who's very, very sick, and he needs to eat an Aver Menachai for some reason, are you allowed to give him an Aver Menachai, which is one of the Zayim Mitzvos Bnei Noach? They can't eat an Aver Menachai. Can you, Jew, give him an Aver Menachai and help heal him? So Rabbi Akiva Eiger seems to say, quoting from the Prima Gadim, who has a Safik, but Rabbi Akiva Eiger seems to say that in this case, because v'chai b'hem is only by Jewish people, there is no bikuach nevesh by Goyim, and if you give him the Eiver Menachai, you're over on Lifnei Eiver and lo sitein mechshol. That's Rabbi Akiva Eiger's conclusion. Now, Rav Shechter didn't think either of the Tosos or the Rabbi Akiva Eiger were proofs. He thought the Tosos maybe wasn't saying it as a conclusion, that was part of the question. And he thought Rabbi Akiva Eiger wasn't giving a psak, he was just quoting the Prima Gadim. That's what Rav Shechter said. Okay. You'll have to look at that to see what you feel about that. But either way, and this is explicit, Reb Chaim Brisker writes in his Sefer on the Rambam, in Hilchos Ratzeach and Perek Tes Halacha Aleph, he writes explicitly that there is no Pikuach Nevesh by Goyim, by Bnei Noach. It's explicit, there's no way of looking around it. Even Rav Shechter agreed to that. He writes that as a dover that's mekubal, that's accepted. He uses that without even bringing a source. He just says, and it's obvious that there's no pikuach nevesh by Goyim. So if there's no pikuach nevesh by Goyim, so what's the Gemara that we just quoted before in Sanhedrin? So basically what the Gemara's question and answer presumably is the Gemara is trying to figure out whether there's a chiyav yiv yaharig v'al yavor for Goyim. Is there a chiyav? And the Gemara is trying to figure out whether there is a ptur onas. All these cases, all the case in the Gemara is an onas. So is there a ptur onas? Yes or no? Are you chayv to be yaharig v'al yavor or no? Is there a ptur of onas? And the Gemara concludes, and this is part of the machlokas in the Rishonim, but at least b'tzina, and maybe even b'farhesia, there would be a ptur of onas. Josh, you are about to say something, so please.
So, wouldn't this be dependent on, doesn't you have a chakir on the type of action that is considered yal-yav, whereas the distinction in Rambam whether or not it's an action or it's a not doing anything
between Sheva Tasa and Kumbas. So
in this situation it's a Sheva
Tasa. Yeah, Reb Chaim actually in a different place discussed at length that the Rambam definitely holds even Sheva Tasa.
That would be consistent with the Rambam in this case.
Because this is a Sheva Tasa for the God. Yeah, but again, the Jew, in our case, the Jew is Kumbas, right? He's giving the treatment. He's telling him what to do. Right, there's no in our case of a treatment, I don't think that's called Sheva Al Tasa. Sheva Al Tasa is if you throw a person onto another person to kill him. That's Sheva Al Tasa. Right? The Jewish doctor, the Jewish psychiatrist is treating the patient actively. Right? He's telling him, you do X, go pray, go do what? He's giving him a treatment plan. I think that would be right, that would be potentially Lifnei Iver, according to Akiva Eiger. So either way, that's according to what? Okay, according to Reb Chaim Brisker, you can ask after, or you can ask now, whatever you want. According to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, again, because Pikuach Nevesh doesn't apply to Goyim, so the Gemara is just trying to figure out whether there's a Ptur Onas or not. Okay, once that's the conclusion, so let's say the conclusion is like the Rambam and Tosos, that according to Reb Chaim, that there is a Ptur Onas by Goyim. So anytime there's an Onas, someone puts a gun to a guy's head and says, eat the Eiver Menachai, there's a Ptur for him to eat that Eiver Menachai, and he's allowed to eat the Eiver Menachai. Yeah? Let's say that's true. Now we have a problem. Because if you look in the Rambam, in the fifth parak of Yesodei HaTorah, the Rambam clearly differentiates between an anas, someone holding a gun to your head, and a choli, and a sickness. By an anas, the Rambam tells us that anytime an anas is ma'anis you, anytime someone forces you, puts a gun to the person's head, and says, do X, so in that case, there's a ptur onas also. So if he does it, it's not a problem, and he's not going to be, meaning let's say it's one of the things he has to do, right? So let's assume it's an issa, that's not one of the Gimel Chamuras, so let's just say. But even if it is, whatever it is, he's not going to be punished for, is the Gimel Chamuras, he's not going to be punished for doing that. So someone puts a gun to a Jew's head, God forbid, and says, worship Avodah Zarah, and he ends up doing it, we can't punish him. However, says the Rambam, when it comes to a choli, if someone's super, super sick, and the only way to heal them is to do Avodah Zarah, is Gilei Arayis, which is really the example that Gemara Sanhedrin brings. So that case, so if he does it, we do punish him. We are going to punish him. There is no ptur onas. There's a distinction between a sickness and an anas and a gun. What's the distinction? Can you think of it? What's the logic? Right, when someone puts a gun to your head and says, do X, so what you're doing is his will. Right? He's forcing you to do his will. When you have a sickness and you do it, so it's really your own will. The Rosh Hashanah discusses this a little bit there. It's really your will. So that's the distinction that some of the Achronim bring. Either way, there's such a distinction. So if the whole Gemara, if there's no Pikuach Nefesh Bagayim, and the whole Gemara is just talking about a Ptur Ones, so a Ptur Ones doesn't apply to sickness. So now we're back to square one. Right? If it doesn't apply to sickness, so our case, which is a case of sickness, the psychiatric patient who's sick has no Ptur Ones to do this Avodah Zarah. So now me treating him, the Jewish psychiatrist, treating the patient is going to be over an Isser, he's going to be over Lifnei Iver, because the guy can't do it. The patient is not allowed to do it. Yeah? So now, why that's important is because we have two understandings, whether it's Pikuach Nefesh B'Agayim. Now, according to what we said originally, the way Rav Shachter understood, which I'm fine passing like him, is that there is Pikuach Nefesh B'Agayim. Right? So none of this Shakulatari makes a difference, right? Distinction between an anas, between a choli, between sickness, and a person holding a gun, there's no distinction, it makes no difference. Right? Because either way, it's Pikuach Nefesh. So Pikuach Nefesh applies to Goyim, end of discussion. But only for Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, only for Reb Chaim Brisker, do we say that if there's no Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim, now we have a problem, because there's no Ptur Ones in a case of a sickness. Good? Okay, good. Okay. So, even according to Reb Chaim, and there's a big, big chiddush in the way we understood Reb Chaim, but I don't want to get too involved in the lumdus. But there's a lot to discuss in that piece. I'm leaving it aside for now. There's a big... What you have to figure out is, then what does a Ptur Ones mean by Goyim? This seems to be a little different. Okay, but not for now. So now, it happens to be that Reb Chaim that I mentioned, that's very, very clear and very posh, that he says is no pikuach nefesh by goyim. If you look in the Chazon Ish's commentary on Reb Chaim, in the newer versions for sure of Reb Chaim Sefer on the Rambam, the one that we have in the shul has it in the back there, Gilyonos HaChazon Ish. There is notes on Reb Chaim Sefer. So there on this, he says where does the Rambam get this from? Where does Reb Chaim get this from? Because if you look at the Rambam himself, in the 10th paragraph of Malachim and Halacha Beis, the Rambam clearly says, Goyim are allowed to be worship Avodah Zarah because of Pikuach Nefesh. You have to look at that to see. So obviously Reb Chaim understands that differently. But so, Chazon Ish obviously didn't hold like this Reb Chaim. So that's, again, a machlokes, obviously, whether there's Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim. And there's a lot more, there are more sources for that, but not for now. So presumably, even if you hold like, let's say Reb Chaim. So if you hold like, the way we originally said that there's Pikuach Nefesh by Goyim, we don't have it, we're good for now. There's Shota, I'm able to treat him, Pikuach Nefesh, I'm able to treat him. Right, not a problem. If I hold like Reb Chaim, so Shota, I'm able to treat him, but now Pikuach Nefesh, there's no Pikuach Nefesh by the guy. And there's no Ptur Ones because it's a sickness. So I can't treat him. So it would be Lifnei Iver for me to treat him that way. But, however, that being said, there's still one way to be Mekel, even according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik, and that is based off a klal. Reb Moshe brings in a few of his shuvos in Or Chaim Chelik Aleph Simen Kuf Pei Vav is one of them, but there are many by the Heter Mechira. Shlomo Zalman also has this by the Heter Mechira. The concept is brought down earlier by the Shehar Melech. Sechemer quotes it when discussing smoking on Tisha B'Av. That anytime you have a machlokas, so someone paskins like X and someone paskins like Y. Now let's say we all paskin like X. Can you help the person to do Y? So, for example, let's just give the example Shara Melch brings. Smoking on Tisha B'Av. It's a machlokas in the poskim whether it's mutter or not. I hold it's aser. Someone sitting right next to me hold it's mutter. Am I able to give him a cigarette on Tisha B'Av? He says, pass me a cigarette. Am I able to do that? Is that lifnei iver or not? So Shara Melch, and this is the klal of Moshe as by the Heter Mechira, helping people who use the Heter Mechira, even if you think it's wrong. So Moshe says, Shara Melch says, there is no lifnei iver in such a case. If someone holds like a legitimate mor ha'orah, if he holds like it's a real, there's a real psak that way. There's someone who really passes that way, and that's what the person holds, and that's what he always holds by, so there's no problem helping. There's no Isser of Lifnei Iver, I should say. No Isser of Lifnei Iver whatsoever in such a case. Reb Moshe's words are a little more explicit or specific, but that's the general rule. So if that's true, and this is what Rav Sobolovsky actually felt, he told me this, that in our case too, so we know, is Catholicism considered Avodah Zarah or not? So this is the Machlokas and the Rishonim. Now, the Meiri is probably the most famous opinion. He holds on the extreme that it's not Usar at all. Tosfos at the beginning of Avodah Zarah and a few other places seem to hold that also it's not a problem nowadays, that it wouldn't be considered Avodah Zarah. Now it happens to be Rov HaRishonim hold that it is Avodah Zarah. Rov HaRishonim hold that it is Avodah Zarah. However, the Ramah and the Shach both quote that Christianity, for Goyim at least, is not Avodah Zarah. Shituf is not an Isser for non-Jews. Now, the later Achronim, the Nod Behuda, the Primagadim, and the Rav was very much of this opinion. When they quoted their Ramah, they would use the Lashon of it's Kishkaga Yotzim Mipiashalit. It's like it's an abomination that he said that. It makes no sense. We don't hold that way. No one holds that way. So it's a little strange. The Ramah does say such a thing, but the Achronim all point out that we don't. That's not true. It is an Isra Avodah Zarah. There is a problem. But there is such an opinion, the Ramah himself writes it, that for non-Jews, Catholicism would not be an Isra Avodah Zarah. So now, going back to our case. So when I, even according to Reb Chaim Soloveitchik says, in a case of a sickness, there's no Ptur Ones, so I have no way to treat, and there's no Pikuach Nefesh, there's no way for me to treat this patient by allowing him to go worship Avodah Zarah. However, it wouldn't be Lifnei Iver if there's a legitimate way to Paskin. So the question is, and it's something to think about, I'm not saying it's for sure, is whether we consider that, you know, this is what the person holds by. Does he really hold like this Ramah, that Catholicism is not Avodah Zarah? Okay, that's something to think about, but that's potentially another way to be makel in such a scenario. One more point just before we end, that really two more points. I've mentioned this before. Rav Shechter once mentioned to me that the Ragachover has a letter. He told me it's in a, he has like a three-volume sefer, is what Rav Shechter told me. He has like all these random, sorry. A very, very small three volumes, he said they're like 20 pages each, of letters of the Ragachover called Piskei Tshuva, I think. So in there, the Ragachover has a whole letter about, when it comes to Lifnei Iver, there are a lot of heterim for Lifnei Iver, right? Treyavri Denara, all these things where you have another way of getting around it. So there are ways to be matir, lifnei iver lo sitin mechshol. However, when we're talking about a mesis, lifnei iver doesn't apply. A mesis is someone who pushes someone to worship Avodah Zarah. So the question is this case a case of a mesis? And do we hold by the Zeragachavar? That's another way lechomra, but that's just something to think about. But one more just facet of the question is that even if we're mekel, let's say we are mekel, and we're mekel by lifnei iver, there's no lifnei iver. There's one more thing that the Gemara in a few places, the Gemara in Avodah Zarah and Vav Amud Beis discusses it. Probably that's where most of the sugya is. The Gemara in Sanhedrin and Samach Gimel Amud Beis and other places points out that there are times that even when there's no lifnei iver, we would still have an iser when it comes to Avodah Zarah of lo yishama al picha. So you can't. The Gemara in Avodah Zarah is talking about going into business with Gaim. The Gemara in Sanhedrin is talking about, I think, a shvua, getting them to swear. Any time that you cause a non-Jew to have his shame Elohim, that his God be heard, or him thank his God, him worship his God, and his God's name be heard. So perpetuating that is an Isser d'oraisa of lo yishama al picha. Even in cases when lifnei iver doesn't apply. Even if, and this is a machlokas between the Taz and the Bach and Yoredei and Kuf Mem Ches, but even if it's mutter for them to thank their gods, still, there may be an Isser of lo yishama al picha of perpetuating, causing them to think they're gods. So that is is another facet of this question that may be lahachmir, to be stringent. So in conclusion, just so we have the whole picture. In conclusion, we have a psychiatric patient who has major depressive disorder of the most severe variety, which means that has no chiyus, right? He looks like he's like not here. At that point, he's hospitalized. Presumably, because as the Rambam tells us, he's under this category, it's a category, he's under this category of a shota. A shota is pater min ha-mitzvos, the doctors assessed him, the rabbi assessed him, he's a shota. Now, his treatment plan starts, and the CBT tells him he has to go worship Avodah Zarah, or he has to pray, let's just call it. He has to pray to his god, or gods, whatever they are. So, in that case, once he's getting a little better, so at a certain point he snaps out of being a shota, and now he's, you know, quote-unquote just, to quote Josh, he's just under the category of Pikuach Nefesh. So Pikuach Nefesh, the Gemara in Sanhedrin seems to tell us, applies to Goyim. So Pikuach Nefesh applies to Goyim, as the Nishmas Avraham tells us, from Mechalin Aleihas HaShabbos. So not a problem to treat him that way, it's Pikuach Nefesh. However, Reb Chaim Brisker clearly said, and we pointed out that the Pashas of Reb Kiv Yeager and the Tosfos and other places, that Pikuach Nefesh may not apply to Goyim. So if it doesn't apply to Goyim, and the Gemara in Sanhedrin is learned out differently, so now there's no Pikuach Nefesh, number one. And maybe there's a ptur ones. There's no ptur ones because there's a distinction between a sickness and an ones. So what can you do? So one way to be makel is to say that lifnei iver doesn't apply in a case when there's a machlokas and poskim. When there's a machloka, some people do X, some people do Y. So some people follow their Amma, and they say Catholicism is not a Avodah Zarah, it's not a problem. So that's one way to be Mekel, even according to Reb Chaim. We pointed out, just another facet of the question is, even if you are Mekel, maybe there may still be an Isser of Lo Yishama Al Picha. There may still be an Isser of perpetuating the name of Avodah Zarah, of causing the guy to think his Avodah Zarah, of hearing the Avodah Zarah's name out loud, you causing someone to say the Avodah Zarah's name. So that may still be an Isser d'oraisa potentially, that may apply even if there is no lifnei iver. So that's something that we don't have time currently to discuss. That's the basic discussion. Again, there's no psak. There's definitely a lot of room to be mako. And there are questions that we still have to figure out a little bit. Yeah. Oh, you don't have a question. Okay, so we're going to end now. Shkayach, everyone.